to VG Club, everybody. My name is Paul slash Fib, otherwise known as the Extra 23 Jack. And welcome. We're going to be discussing Pyre today, but before we get to that, let's go ahead and start with some introductions. So, who wants to introduce themselves first?
I'm Tyler, slash Chaos Dragon 22.
I'm Chris.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No worries. I'm Javi, slash Javiously on Twitter.
All right, who's next?
Who are you, Chris?
I'm Chris. Korean9 on Twitter.
I'm Deanna, also known as Grace, or Piranha Plant on Twitter, and I approve this message.
I'm Marcus. I'm at Kulak on Twitter.
All right. So yeah, what's your guys' history with Supergiant games?
I've played Bastion, I played Pyre, and I played Hades. So pretty, like, I didn't play what Transistor was the other one.
Yeah.
I think that's the only one I haven't played.
I've played Bastion and Transistor. Transistor was the only one that I really, like, super enjoyed. Like, Bastion is kind of like, I just played it out of obligation mostly because everybody else liked it.
I kind of was the opposite. I finished Bastion entirely. I was really excited about Transistor, especially because the art style really spoke to me. I thought Transistor looked phenomenal. But once I started playing it, like, the turn-based element to it, and like, it just kept layering on all these mechanics, and I was kind of overwhelmed, and then I just wasn't in the mood, so I kind of fell off of Transistor, but I always appreciated it from afar.
Yeah, I remember when I got a 360, I think Bastion was one of the first games I got because I didn't really have a PC capable of playing games at the time. So while it wasn't like revolutionary, I think it'll always hold a special place in my heart because it was one of those one of the first games along with like Mass Effect that I got for the 360. So really enjoyed playing through that. And then yeah, I've pretty much played every other offering of a Supergiant game. I mean, it feels like each time they do a game, they do an entirely different genre. Like Bastion was kind of an action game. Transistor was more, I don't want to say real-time strategy, but it kind of had some of those elements to it. And then Pyre, of course, is this NBA Jam sort of game that we'll get into later. And then Hades is a kind of roguelike. So, I mean, like, I'm just, like, I really respect the studio for just, like, getting outside their comfort zone and just doing all these different genres. It's It's quite interesting to watch play out.
Yeah, and they don't really chase any trends. They kind of always deliver something that nobody asked for, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
It's a good segue into my history with the developer. I tried playing Bastion, wasn't a big fan. Tried playing Transistor, wasn't a big fan. So I decided, no, I'm just good with these guys. I have heard a lot of good stuff about Hades, so I'll probably get around to trying that. But you know, they like you said, they've tried a lot of different genres. I don't know if they've perfected any of them, at least in my experience.
No, I mean, that's a fair point. I mean, like, as I'm thinking of Jeff, just some dude. Like, he's a person who really likes gameplay, for example. And I feel like with these games, I feel like the narrative is the defining feature. So I don't know, like, how, if you're not into the narrative, how you respond to the game itself, but I don't know. I've enjoyed my time with them, but yeah, then again, I'm also a story buff, so.
That actually kind of describes my my experience with Bastion. Like, I ended up just turning off the narrator. Like, I know, like, that's the big draw of the game, but, like, I didn't really like having, like, every single action narrated. So, I just focused on the gameplay.
That's fair. I only played, like, a little bit of Bastion and Transistor. I never really got far into them, but then yeah, now Pyre, and I've played a lot of Hades. So
Hades might be like the most gameplay centric one. Right.
Yeah.
Like, there's a deep story there, but like it's very much, you know, different layers of combat and, you know, handling of enemies in that game, so.
Yeah, and a lot of different weapons and buffs to those weapons, and yeah, the loadouts are pretty diverse.
Yeah, or different versions of the same weapon, depending on your choices. So.
Yeah, and I also, I mean, I feel like Hades got, like, I mean, it just won the DICE Awards, and did it win the, Jeff Keighley's event
Game
in the
Awards.
Fall? Is that the Game Keighley. Awards? Did it win that, or was that The Last of Us Part 2?
I want to say it was The Last of Us, because usually the Game Awards kind of, but Hades won Game of the Year in many other places. Yeah.
Last of Us did win.
Yeah, I think a lot of the reason why it's also succeeded is like, I think just every time I hear somebody talk about the game, they're just like, "Yep, the characters are like super hot." So I feel like they've reached into a key demographic there, and it's paid off for them. But that said, let's go into the actual game itself, Pyre. So, I've never been a big sports game fanatic, so I've only heard about NBA Jam. But, you know, when we were kind of selling, I think Javi in particular, on the idea last time we re-recorded, we compared Pyre to NBA Jam. How similar would you say it is, and how do you think it, I mean, it differs in terms of narrative and, like, the RPG elements, but...
It's kind of just in that spirit of an arcade game where, like, your objective is really simple on paper, but Pyre kind of, you know, with the different characters with their different abilities, the way that they move, the size of their aura, like, they added all these layers of complexity on top of something that's usually really simple. It's meant to be an arcade cabinet that you can play for like 5 minutes at a pizza shop, but it is very similar to NBA Jam in a lot of ways. It's kind of like just a push and pull, and even like how when you're on defense, you have your aura and you can knock the ball out of their hands in NBA Jam. And that would just be like you run up and you're mashing the slap button to like knock them over and grab the ball. And then you're just trying to get the ball to the other end of the court to slam dunk it. You know, it mirrors that flow, that gameplay loop, where it feels really, really good to just slam that ball into the hole. So, yeah, I think it's pretty close, but... They built on top of that foundation.
Yeah, yeah. So like each of the characters also has like different amount of points they can take off of the opposing team's pyre. So like, yeah, there's like some added elements to it, but it keeps the core of it pretty strong.
Yeah, like starting out, it doesn't feel like it's as over the top as NBA Jam, but then like you get some of the later characters like Pamethas or Gilman or something, they could just like fling themselves across the entire field in like 2 seconds. Like, yeah, okay, that's basically like, you know, dunking the ball from half court in NBA Jam.
Yeah.
So it definitely picks up.
I felt like the bog. My fault. But I felt like the bog witches in particular, they would do that. Like those freaking bog witches can like dunk like freaking hell. Like the first time I went up against the evil bog witches, they just like wiped the floor with me, and I was just like, "Fuck! How are they doing this?"
Yeah, Bertrude stayed on my team once she joined, like almost all the time.
But yeah, speaking of which, did you guys have any mainstays on your team the entire game?
Tizo was mine. I seemed to keep him around pretty much right to the end, and then Bertrude.
Same with me, Tizo.
Yeah, the third rotated depending on the kind of the field and the who I was facing.
Yeah, I tried to vary it up, like based on who was gonna get, experience, so that I could anoint them to be liberated. But like, Pamathai and Bertrude are pretty much like almost always there.
I didn't have like a main foot, like this is the second time I played it, so like I was just kind of trying to see how liberating other people this time around like worked. So I just kind of like was always changing up, trying to level up, certain characters and get them through, but there was no like this one's always in my roster.
My favorite
Yeah.
was Rookie because he was just a fast boy, and I loved just running around the map with him like that. It was one of the few characters where I really felt like I had control of him. I was surprised to hear all y'all say Tizo as being one of your faves. I threw that boy away right away. When he was doing like those Voltorb self-destructs, I was like, oh, this isn't useful. So I just got rid of him. I guess I was playing him wrong.
Offensively, though, he can float and like. He does some other cool things.
Well, when he explodes in the portal ability, I didn't get to use it too much, but when it did work in my favor, it was really nice just because it was portal was close and you just get another character and you score points.
Yeah, and
And
Tizo wasn't necessarily one of my favorites. It's more of like the best of what's left. So like my favorites, I usually prioritized anointing them and sending them off.
yeah, I didn't really use Tito's attack that much, but his movement and being able to fly, that put him up there.
I love the zigzag. That was fun. I didn't. So, I kept Tizo around until the end, like the first time I played through the game. But this time, I was like Chris. I was trying to vary it up. So my first time, I sent what's her name? Jordial.
Yes.
Yeah.
Joe Dariel.
Joe Dariel. I sent her away for first because I'm like, okay, she's been here pretty much the longest. Or one of the people that's been here the longest, so I think she deserves to get out of here. And then the first time I was playing through, I was just like, I didn't like her as like this bulky character. I was just like, okay, I'm gonna send you away because you kind of deserve it, and two, I don't want to play with her.
That's partly why I picked her
Fair.
first. The other reason was because I didn't want to send either of the other two characters that were available at the time. But like the first liberation, right? It was Jodariel, Rookie, or Sir Gilman, and I liked using Rookie. And I had a conversation with Sir Gilman like literally right before the liberation, right, where he's like, "Oh, don't send me away if you have the chance, because I need to regain my honor or whatever." So I was like, "Okay, Jodariel."
Yep, sucks for him. He never got sent home for me, so shouldn't have told me that. Go to the back of the
Sick.
list.
I did send him like the third time, I think.
Yeah, both times I played this game, I kept Sir Gilman around to the very end. I'm just like, eh, whatever. It feels more in line with this character that he would let everybody else go first. But speaking of which, how did you get so? I feel like Pyre is a unique game in that it allows you to continue the game even if you lose. So, how did you guys go about that? Did you, like, if you lost, did you end up just letting it happen, or did you let certain characters, rival teams win?
No. I just kept restarting each match until I won.
So that there's a couple liberation rights. Well, maybe not, like it, because it all depends on how, I guess, how you play. But like there was one where like Tamatha and Pamatha come up against each other, and she kind of like asks you to let her go or let her sister go. So I like did that, but I didn't like otherwise. No, like I didn't
Yeah.
lose to like let other people through. I was trying to get as many people through my own.
Yeah, I remember the first time through. So I did exactly what you did with Tamatha, the sister. I let her win because Panatha was basically begging you, like, "Oh, please let her go."
Yeah. Feel bad.
But the first time through, I let what is it, the Fate team with the elder dog character and his adopted human mm-hmm. son, I went ahead and let them win. And that ended up being tragic, because the moment you let them win, the moment you let them win, the grandpa's like, no, my son's gonna go in my place, and then I think he pretty much hits the bucket. So if you make them stay, both the characters end up living till the very end. So
I feel like I must be heartless or something, because I did the same. Like, I went through the same thing where Tamitha was like, please let Tamitha win, and I didn't let her win. Like, yeah, I'm gonna win.
I'm curious. I don't remember. Can you have Pamitha be the one that you send up in that match?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would be really funny. She's like, no, let my sister win. It's nope, like, no, nah, it's going to be you. Yeah.
You're going whether you like it or not. And then, speaking of the rival teams, was there like any like rival characters or rival teams that you ended up really enjoying your interactions with?
Like you mentioned, that grandpa dog who loved the rights and was always like paying us compliments every time the match was about to start. I dug him, and I felt sorry for him. You're just looking at his little picture, because I faced him in the second liberation right, and of course I'm not gonna let him win. But then he's at the bottom of the ranking at the start of the next season, and now it's just, I felt a little bit bad, you know, for like a second. But his son sucked so much, or grandson sucked so much, that I you know, I slept at night.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites too.
Yeah, I kind of liked Ignarius, the other demon, because he was kind of hitting on Jodariel.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny, because I kept her around. She's like, I don't know, maybe I should do it, maybe not. But then I sent her away, so it's just Ignarius just ended up living alone forever.
Well, I mean, like in the epilogue, it's just like, okay, that guy ended up staying, but he hooked up with a lot of people. So, I mean, he made the best of it.
Yeah.
They're all just like replacements for his winter, but.
But oh, so I broached this topic on Twitter, but so I felt like I got like a good backstory for almost every character besides Hedwyn. I felt like even though I kept him around almost to the very end, I just didn't get a ton about Hedwyn. All I got was like, okay, he's in love with one of the harps, you know, like star-crossed lovers situation. And I was really hoping, like, because with every other character, I feel like you could interact with another team and get some backstory or some unique elements. And I felt like Hedwyn, like, they make him out to be the Aragorn of this game. And I felt like he just, he ended up being the most bland character.
He's just a dude.
Just a sweet boy.
Yeah.
Well, I thought the background, like, the additional background we got for him was, you know, he pulls us aside and says, hey, I was really horny. I had to leave my job to go try and find this lady again. But, like, that's sort of it. It was very strange. I can see where you're coming from. If you also got that and it was the end of it, because it almost feels like there's a whole other half of a story that we were missing there. If, like, really? That's it, my guy? Like, you just left and then somebody attacked while you were out trying to find her? I didn't really, I guess, get why he was so drawn to her. Besides, you know, again, everyone in this game is massively, which I guess makes sense why Hades followed the
forbidden love. Yeah, but speaking of which, like, what did you think about, like, the kind of the flavor text and, like, society that Pyre was trying to create? Like, the Commonwealth? I keep thinking of Fallout 4 when they would say that, but...
I feel like there's not really that much explained about it besides, like, they ban reading, they ban worshipping the scribes. What else is there?
Yeah, it's just kind of like a repressive society.
Yeah.
Like, make it out to be like, you know, this terrible place, but like, we don't ever really get that much information about it. You're just like thrown into the downside, and it's like, oh, the Commonwealth cast you down. It's bad. It's evil. Get rid of it. Like, why?
Yeah, and I mean, like, if you read the flavor text for like the downside, you're like, okay, a lot of the food and water down here is poisonous, and apparently only humans are the ones that grow horns. I feel like everybody else is immune to that effect. But besides that, I felt like I'm like, okay, I'm cool staying here in the downside.
Yeah, at least it's ours, right? Bad.
Well, so are there Titan bodies littering the Commonwealth too? Because that seemed to be the common thread. Like, no matter what area you're going to, it's like, oh, yep, there's another body there.
I don't think so. I feel like the Titans were in the I want to call it the underworld, but yeah, they I felt like they were only down where you were, not in the Commonwealth. But yeah, I actually found that to be quite interesting because like each time you would go to it, it's just like, oh, this is where the eight scribes fell this beast, and you can read accounts of what happened from each of the eight scribes in the Book of Rites. Mm-hmm. That, and it's pretty metal. Like, you know, just go, you go to like a ritual site, and it's just like, oh, it's a giant scorpion that was crushed with a giant boulder. What the fuck happened?
I feel stupid now because I thought those were just like statues or something.
To be fair, there's like a lot of reading.
Yeah.
Like, to get like all the flavor text that Paul's talking about. Like, at some point, I was like, I don't care. I just care about the characters. Like,
yeah, no, there were times where I'm like, this is. I feel like I'm reading a book.
Yeah, it's like 12 pages here. We just unlocked 12 pages. I'm good.
Yeah.
And it didn't help that some, like, I kind of gave up, like, by the time I was on the fourth scribe, I was just like, okay, I'm good. Because, like, some of them would broach the same topics, like, again and again, just from different perspectives, and I was just like, yeah, this is just too much, but kind of found it ironic, like in a game that revolves around a society that's banned reading, there's so much reading in this game. I mean, there's a couple of like voice acted moments, but mostly like you are reading everything, and I feel like that I it was a little bit of delicious irony. I was like, I wonder if they did that on purpose. I mean, other than for
your character
know,
is the reader.
And, yeah. Like, we are the only ones that have that power.
You're going to use it.
I mean, do you guys think maybe the Commonwealth was onto something with banning reading then? Because, yeah, it wasn't very enjoyable.
Whoa.
There's no good books. Get rid of them.
Like, oh my god, this novel is so trashy and boring. Like, I can't read this. Nobody else should have to either.
See, I read a lot of the lore simply because exactly, you know, you'd go to a new spot or have a new match and say a new page is happening, and yeah, I could have just gone to the book and clicked on the page to get rid of that sparkly, but I was like, well, I'm already here, let me just at least browse through the page, and I couldn't say that anything that I read was particularly engaging or gripping. It was one of those weird things too, where it's like the more that was revealed, it was like, oh, you know, I sort of wish I just had all this backstory to begin with to go through as I liked. You know, it made a lot more sense once you had a lot more pages to go through, and I felt like that presentation of the information was better than like eking it out. It's like a mystery trying to figure out what's going on. But if I don't care what's going on, then it's just annoying at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of viewed it as like from BioWare games, like the Codex sort of thing. I mean, it's nice to have, but I sure as hell didn't read every single Codex entry in like the Mass Effect and Dragon Age games.
Yeah, I think I wonder if this game would have benefited from more of like a Souls style, or a little bit more of a Souls style of like showing, telling you about the world around you and stuff with, because like those games don't have a lot of big walls of text that you have to deal with. There's item descriptions hidden. I don't know how you do that in Pyre as it is now, but like all that lore is there for you to find if you want to like really dive in, but it's really just kind of dressing, and like it doesn't slow down the experience at all.
Yeah, and I feel like that could be possible because you do have the relics you can equip to each character. And they're, I mean, like, if you really wanted to go the Souls route, you could have been like, oh, this fragment is from the Titan, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and yeah. It grants blank because the Titan was infamous for, drowning virgins.
I love that kind of storytelling. Like, you have a tangible object that is part of the gameplay, and then it ties into, like, it tells you a little bit about the world around you. I think that's a way better way to do it.
Did you guys ever get a sense of how the messenger imps are able to like go back and forth between the two different realms, but everybody else can't unless you go up this like a gigantic inverse waterfall?
The impression I got is that they were going right up to the edge of each of the worlds and just sort of like tossing it over, and someone else was able to grab it at like the same time. But if someone else got a different impression,
I thought there was like a thin barrier that basically they like only they could either, you know, pass something off, like you said, like tossing it over the wall or whatever, or they're the only ones that can really like move through it. Normal creatures can't. In some way, but if you could just toss it over the wall like that, it's like anybody should be able to do that.
And I felt kind of a little silly because I'm like, oh, why am I going through the effort of freeing Tizo when Tizo could just fly to the other side and greet everybody else?
That's why I don't think Tizo could do that. I think it is something where it has to be some real close, because I remember there's one point where you're flying your ship near the where you actually do this liberation rites. If you keep trying to go up, they're like, nah, you can't go up there. Like, you can't fly that high. But, like, the messenger imps could fly higher, just not all the way through.
And Tizo's an imp, but he's a drive imp, right? Not a messenger imp.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Oh, dang, am I being racist? Are they not all the same?
I don't know. Like, because they call the messenger imps, and they call the ones that run the wagon drive imps, so... I don't know.
Maybe it might just be their jobs.
Like, you know, a cobbler and a smithy, you know, that sort of thing.
So I'm looking at Tizo's page on the Pyre wiki, and Drive Imp is clickable. So when you click on it, it just says Drive Imp is one of the occupations from the game Pyre.
Like, wow, they went deep on that. So they obviously they did not explain it.
Yeah, that's what it was for me, just video game logic. They just can, don't think about it.
I do like that there is an entire Pyre wiki, though.
There is.
I mean, if any game deserves a wiki, I feel like it's that game in particular, this game in particular. But speaking of which, what did you guys name your, like, witch girl? Like, you can just be like, yeah, my name ends in an A. Can you help me come up with it? And then you're just, like, going through all the options.
Faye seemed the most, like, correct, for lack of a better word. I just went with Faye.
I did Faye as well, actually.
I went all the way
forgot.
To the...
Oh, go ahead.
I mean, I went through all of them, but I was like, yeah, that one just seems right.
Went with,
I
with Ray.
Oh, go ahead.
R-H-A-E.
Oh, that one's good. I went with Bay because I just thought it sounded funny.
This one can't be right.
Sure.
Like, hey, Bay, get over here.
I like the flavor text on that one. It's like, this can't be right, can it?
And she's just like, she's got the Professor Oak syndrome, where she's like, yeah, that sounds right. My grandson is totally named Fart.
Oh, Habib.
I think mine was just May.
This pirate, there's all, they have all the name variants here. for yeah. the Vagabond. Bay yeah. the Bloodless.
Speaking of the... go ahead, Javi.
Sure. I was going to say, looking at all the names here, I believe I also went with Ray.
I didn't know it was the Wretched, though.
Yeah. I mean, like, that happened so early that, like, I completely forgot about naming her. So it's funny.
I mean, it doesn't make too much of a big difference. I just got a laugh out of that.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of the reader, what did you guys choose for the reader's backstory?
Oh.
Completely I don't forget. Remember what the options were, but I knew
I think one of them was straight amnesia. Like, I don't remember.
Amnesia, there was the crippled scholar, and then there was just like, oh yeah, I was a farmhand.
I think I went with amnesia as well.
Yeah, I picked the crippled scholar, but like I said, I didn't remember what any of those really. It didn't seem like it would really make much difference.
Yeah, seeing as I also can't remember what I can't remember doing this, I went with amnesia, yeah. I guess.
Strange.
Yeah, when you get up to the final rite, you're talking to what is the woman's name, Celeste.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just like, okay, what are you doing here? And then you're just like, oh yeah, I was arrested for blank, and I was a blank in a previous life, sort of thing.
Mm.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Hey, so I'm gonna be honest here. I'm literally playing the game right now because I did not finish, because I wasn't a big fan of it. I think I'm on that final, like. Trek up where all the stars are dying and the liberation rites are coming a lot quicker, but the gameplay was so repetitive and it was just interspersed with okay now click this daddy and then like click this and like that was it. So I would like I'd play for a half an hour a night, then leave and come back a couple days later and do the same thing. So I couldn't tell you what that is. I could tell you my like freedom speech that we had to give at one point. God, that was a terrible speech. I think it was just, hey, if you don't believe in this, just leave, okay? You're not worthy. I didn't go the religious zealot route, but I definitely was like, let's go fuck up the Commonwealth. Like, I think that's what we're all here for now.
Forgot about that too.
I think I just said something like, you know, what is it? The typical like anime sort of thing. Like while we might not see each other, we'll be together in each other's hearts always, and we'll see each other in the stars when we die, or something like that.
I don't even remember what mine was. I just kind of fast forwarded through it.
Yeah.
I think that like Super Giants games often, like they fill. Like what I describe as like the best or games that appeal to like how do I put this they're not like a Naughty Dog game or like typical AAA games try to appeal to everyone. They generally try to be very balanced and stuff, so like, but Supergiant games often don't work for everybody, right? And but the people that it does work with, it hits really hard. And so I knew a friend who loved Transistor. Like Transistor is one of their favorite games of all time. And then for me, it just doesn't work. I don't know. You know, I couldn't get into it. And then you see, like, I think maybe Hades is the biggest crowd pleaser they've made. But like just looking on YouTube at Pyre videos, they don't have a ton of views. Like even the biggest Pyre video essays don't have a big audience, but the things, the content of those videos, the things they have to say, like this game really hit hard with certain people. Like people really were into the lore, into the characters, praising how they wove the narrative and the story into like actual the game. When you're actually playing the game, everything affects everything else. So I mean, I give it credit for that, but like it's like as you've all heard, like I forget critical story moments, and like it's just overwhelming the amount of information that this game gives you. So it just kind of falls up by the wayside for me. But I do
I do give it credit for like working with some people.
I mean, like, if you I mean, if you dash straight through it, it's a 12-hour game. 12-hour game. So it's like, you know, compared to some RPGs, it's not too long. But there, like we said earlier, there's a lot of text. So I feel like if you did remember everything, that would actually be pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the length of the game may be technically pretty short. But yeah, like I'm a slower reader. So like sometimes when I'm playing Pyre, I'm like, it's been like half an hour of just reading, you know, like I want to move on now.
But I want to get to the next rite, right?
It's like, yeah, exactly.
So that's why I kind of stopped reading the big book when the options came up. Like, I just want to go play some more.
Yeah.
But it's and funny, then... like, Wolfred, like, literally asks you what you think of the book, and I was like, eh, it's a little dense. I was like, that's like me talking, not my character.
Volfrid's over there with his like pipe, you know, like tree Gandalf being like, oh, what did you think of the book? It was kind of dense. I don't like it.
Yeah, I think my response to that was, you have to experience the book, that bottom option. Because it's like, you know, this book is bullshit, Volfrid. Don't ask. Like, don't even lie.
Speaking of Wolfred, I felt like he was like the hardest character to play with. I had to use him because that was one of the few trophies I had left, was get a certain number of points with him. But the moment I could like let him go, I was like, oh god, thank god, I can go back to using Pamitha, Gilman, and Bertrude.
Yeah, the biggest thing with him is when he uses his like little teleport thing. I mean, it's not a teleport, he like goes underground or whatever, but after he uses it, he stops like dead still for a few seconds. It's like, if you get like right next to a pyre and don't go into it, you're pretty much like screwed.
Yeah, that happened to me a ton. I was really frustrated about it.
Yeah, I felt like if I didn't, there was a particular item you got from going inside the crystal ball and duking it out with the wraith that doubled his blink ability. Felt like as soon as I got that, it was a bit easier. But before that, I was just like, oh god, I hate playing as this character. He's so slow.
I was going to ask you, yeah, because you're talking about trophies, so you're playing on PlayStation. How does this game control compared? Well, I mean, you wouldn't really know the mouse and keyboard, but how do you think the game controlled just on a controller?
Go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, I felt it was a little sluggish, like if you're trying to pick a character or if you were trying to throw the ball, it was always a little. Just it would be not where I'd always want it to go. I guess with most it'd be a little easier.
Yeah, I hardly ever aimed the ball and threw it in, even though that didn't quote unquote banish you for the next turn. I was always just like, yeah, I'm gonna dunk it every single time.
Yeah. I never aimed it where I wanted it to go within, like, before I got banished when I was trying to aim.
Because I think for me, part of my issue with this game is that the movement of the characters on PC, you're clicking like it's an RTS, like you're just starting saying, hey, go in this direction. And now if on the controller, you're, you know, with your analog stick able to say, yeah, just come here. I feel like that might make it have felt more responsive.
Like when you're you're running, Marcus?
Yeah.
Yeah. You have direct control with the controller.
I thought more of the ball control, but yeah, the character movement was fine.
Yeah, I played it on PC with the controller this time around, and I thought it felt fine.
Gotcha. Huh. Good to know.
And that was so another feature that I feel like is prominent through all of the Supergiant games is they have something akin to a difficulty modifier, so you can do something to like boost the difficulty, like make enemies stronger, have more health, that sort of thing. In this game, that was kind of represented as Titan Stars. Did you guys Did you, what did you guys think of those?
Good God. I put the game on the reduced difficulty, and like when those started coming up, I was like, why in the hell would I want to make this game harder?
Yeah, I didn't. Like, I used it for one. I think they gave you like a bonus or something for one of the matches, or you had to use it for one of the matches. But other than that, no, I don't want to give them extra speed or extra, you know, juice to kill my pyre. Or I'm good. I'll take my chances at default.
Exactly.
I started out off on the hard difficulty, and then when the time starts came around, I had to reduce it to normal because I had like 6 or 7 of those active at any given time, and that just made the game too hard. For my sanity, I had to turn the difficulty down. And there was, for the trophy, you have to, for one of the trophies, you have to activate all 12 Titan Stars and beat an opponent on normal difficulty. You can't even go to reduced. So I did that more than a couple of times.
That sounds like a nightmare. I did the Titan Constellation or Titan Star thing once, just because I saw that there was a missing chapter in the book, and I was like, oh, that's probably one of those stupid things. And sure enough, yeah, I think that's what triggered it to open. But I got to echo pretty much everyone else here. For me, it was much more like, I just want to get through this round. Like, I was very much in that camp of I'm gonna get, you know, a perfect run through. I'm not gonna get beaten by anybody. So it didn't make sense to make it harder for me to do that.
Fair enough. I just did it because it's like, oh, this is how I get EXP. And there was one thing I wanted to ask you guys, like, in terms of the Enlightenment, do you know what the qualifications were? Because at first I was like, okay, if you're above like a certain level threshold, it'll say you're Enlightened. But sometimes I went, I'd have a character like at level 4 and wouldn't touch them for an entire quote unquote season. And I'd get to the final rite and be like, yeah, they're not worthy. So I never explained how that worked.
I don't actually know.
Yeah, I don't either. I assumed it was the same thing, like based on their level.
Oh man, I was really hoping someone had that answer, because I've run into that a few times where I was like, all right, I'm gonna get rid of like Joe Dariel, because I didn't send her off the first time, which I should have. And so in the following like rites, I'm like, okay, it's her time. Like, I got her up to level 3, which is what I thought the initial thing was, and then I got her up to level 4, which I thought the next like act is like, oh no, I must have been mistaken. It must have been 4 the whole time. And yeah, it must be like you have to play with them fairly recently within the season and have that level requirement. But yeah, they do not spell it out, and that's really frustrating.
According to the Pyre Wiki, each of your companions has their own personal journey to enlightenment, which can be achieved by mentoring them as well as having them participate in the rites. The amount of enlightenment earned can be increased through the use of items and talismans.
So yeah, EXP.
Yeah.
So little RNG.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe it is the mentoring then, because when I was given that choice, was like, here, go fuck off for a little bit. I would always just study the book because it gave everybody a bonus, a buff. So I was like, well, I don't want to focus on any one person. Let me just spread it around. And so maybe had I at those points gone and talked to the people I wanted to get rid of, maybe that might have unlocked it.
Sounds so bad to people I want to get rid of. Like, I know that's the game, right? Like, you want to send them up because they're gonna do good things up top with the plan, but it just sounds awful. Like, I want to get rid of this person.
So many of them played terribly. They were a hindrance on the team. They were a liability, man.
Okay, you got banished to the downside. Now I'm banishing you back to the surface.
Yeah,
you're not cool enough to hang with this gang.
Yeah, I think the goal was to have it be bittersweet of like the characters that you use most and invest the most in are the ones that you're intended to lose first. And so it's forcing you to diversify your gameplay and feel that sting of like, yeah, I technically succeeded in our goal in the game, but now it's harder to play the game. It's harder to continue to succeed. And you miss your friends.
Yeah, I feel like with Hedwyn, like with his like epilogue, he was just like, I felt so sorry I couldn't get everybody out. And I was just like, look, from the very beginning, there was like seven rights. So of course, you know, only, yeah, at max, two of you are going to have to stay behind at the very least.
Yeah.
So I guess I was just like ahead when you need to accept the reality of the situation. But yeah, speaking of the epilogue, what did you guys do for your indecisions?
Wait, you mean like when we picked who went last?
Yeah, I mean, what did you do towards the end? Like, did the plan succeed for you guys? And you know, like, who you sent up last? How you handled what's the guy's name? The other demon person,
Orlek.
Orlek, yeah.
My plan succeeded, so they created a new society, I guess, whatever that was. And I actually sent Orlek back. I kept Bertrude, Tizo, and Sir Gilman at home with me in the downside.
Yeah, Bertrude was like, I don't really care for the Commonwealth, but part of me wanted to send her up because she had a thing for Wilfred.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking too. But I ended up not sending her.
But even Wilfred's like sitting down with her like, hey, there's many different types of love. Please don't touch me, because like the bog witches, if they touch you, you get paralyzed or something.
So I had sent Bertrude up previously, and on my final one, I was like, I chose Wolfred to go, and then he turned around and gave me the choice of, you know, do I send him up, do I send the other demon dude, or do I want to go back up? And I chose to go home.
Ooh. Yeah, so mine was, their plan succeeded. They made whatever the union thing is called. So, like, my final liberation rite, I had picked Bertrude to be anointed, and so she's like, no, I think the reader should go. And, like, because she was talking about, like, oh, I don't care about the surface world, I was like, okay, that makes sense. So I sent the reader up. And, I don't really know, like, I don't know why anybody would have sent Orlek up, because he shows up, you talk to him, like, twice in the entire game, and then he just, like, shows up, like, oh, you can send him back up, like, okay, but where's my motivation for that?
So I felt
he's a dick.
I felt so sorry for him. I just like this time through, I was just like, I had let him go at the beginning of my last playthrough, and this time through, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna be selfish. I'm gonna be the one who goes up, and I couldn't do it. He got screwed over so much. It's just like, you know, he was about to go up, and his buddy was like, nope, and, like, pushed him off the edge, and then she got killed, and then the voice is just like, yeah, fuck, I wasn't expecting that to happen. Nobody goes up this time. Nightwings, you have sinned, or something like that. Yeah. I was just like, ugh. Yeah. That, and I felt like it, what did you guys think of the voice?
Thought it was a woman.
I liked him. He's a prick, but I liked him.
Yeah. Oh, no, I love to hate this character. Like, he's like the... I just, like, sometimes you get this character and you're just like, oh my god, he is so punchable. God, he is... grits on my nerves, but I love to hate him.
It's literally a voice that you can't punch.
Even haunts the reader's dreams. Like, you're trying to get some sleep and he's just like... Oh, now I've sinned. Why are you participating with Sandalwood? Ooh.
Yeah, I still get why they were so mad at Sandalwood. Like, they didn't really seem like he did that much bad on his own. He was just part of the shitty Nightwing team.
Who was angry at Sandalwood?
The narrator. Voice.
Oh, because, I mean, he got cast down there because he you know. he had the printing press and all that, so they certainly didn't want him coming back up and causing a bullshit up top. And like the guy, as the game goes on, like you learn that the voice knows that there's a plan. I don't know. Did they ever kind of like expand? Is that maybe somebody that they knew previously?
Oh yeah,
he was the first guy.
Yeah,
he was part of a Nightwing. So maybe some of that anger is just like, oh, you ruined the sanctity of the Nightwings or something like that. And it's just like, kind of a poor reason, but it is a reason.
And then his new title of like Archbishop something or another, like it was sounding pretty anime with his new title. I didn't quite understand if he's like a corporeal being up in the Commonwealth and he like is in a position of power, or he's just, you know, floating astral, you know, spirit haunting people's dreams.
He reminded me of the Monty Python like god image. Just like every time he would show up, I would just chuckle to myself. But yeah, his full title in the Commonwealth is Archjustice Anaroblis the Ninth. So yeah, of course they gave him like the most complicated name. Just be like, yeah, longer name means you're more pompous. So go for it.
I mean, that dude was rolling his R's like a Brit. It was ridiculous. He was going all out with it.
So going back to Javi's Pyre Wiki, it seems like he's a real person. He's not like this mystical being. It says, once he returned to the Commonwealth, he upheld their tradition of oppression, including the literacy ban. And then I guess he oversaw the stuff happening down. He oversaw the rites, basically.
I knew this wiki would come in handy.
But yeah, and then since I had let Pamitha's sister go, Wolfred was like, okay, this is going to be a peaceful revolution. And since I let Tamitha go, she ended up spearheading a rebellion. And so many, apparently a lot of people died because of that. I was just like, you know, like my fingers together, like, ooh, that wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah, did anybody's plan succeed and they didn't send Tamitha up? Like, because that's how mine went as well. It went to shit. People died.
I didn't send Tamitha, so my plan was like peaceful or whatever it was supposed to be.
Yeah, same.
That's neat.
Look at the
is Tamitha
kind of...
a Hitler, or like what? What would she do there?
Butterfly effect.
No, Tamitha. I mean, she was. She's pissed off at the Commonwealth, so she, you know, gets what's left of the harps, because apparently the Commonwealth is, you know, pretty much wiped out most of the harps to the point where there's no male harps left. So it's like, oh, okay, they're gonna die out regardless of what happens. Apparently.
Not if
but there was also some backstory being like, oh, the humans are descended from the harps, and it was like a mutation where some of them came out without wings, and then a division in cultures arised. So I don't know, maybe getting it on with somebody like Hedwyn is the only way to save their species.
Oh, weird. I think in the book it mentioned that everyone had wings, but only the harps kept their wings because they valued freedom over everything else. But that could also just be the book lying to me. It sucks.
In conclusion, this is why we banned reading. Good night. No, I mean, some of that stuff, like, you really have to read into it. That was my interpretation of the text. But, yeah, basically, they're just like... Tamitha leads like this violent rebellion, so you know Sandalwood's trying to have this peaceful demonstration, and then Tamitha comes in and is just like, blood.
Huh. That's, yeah, I mean, I guess I can see that from her the story she tells, as far as like the background between the sisters and their being at ends with each other or at odds with each other. I guess based on who I've like sent up so far since we finished, I don't know how it's going to go, because I just sent a bunch of peaceful people up that I didn't want. So I can't imagine they're even doing anything really useful up there so far. So we'll see if my plan succeeds. Did anybody's plan just out and out fail?
I think you have to purposely lose or choose not to restart when you lose for in order for it to fail, because Fulford's planner, it has like a percentage chance of, okay, this is the percentage chance the revolution is going to succeed. So as long as you keep winning, like, you can send up whoever you want, and I feel like you'll get a good result.
Oh, okay. Because I know they're talking like, oh, you know, the Jodariel, she's big and strong and real, like, willful, so it'd be really useful up there. So I thought who you send up determines how well the plan does, too.
Yeah, I mean, they mentioned that, like, they'll be like, okay, certain people are gonna have more influence. So somebody like Jodariel or Sandalwood's gonna have more influence than somebody like, I don't know, Gilman.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it does like that dice roll at the end that's just like, okay, if it's a 9 or below, it succeeds. If it's 10, it fails. Or I don't know, something like that. So,
right. Cause yeah, you were talking about like Mass Effect earlier. And so that reminded me of both the Suicide Run and Mass Effect 2, as well as just that overall battle with the Reapers at the end of 3. I was like, all right, let's position the pieces and get our number real high. But if it doesn't really matter who you're sending up too much, then I guess it's just not quite as good of an implementation with that. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I understand where you're coming from, but it would be frustrating if you're like, oh, I personally chose these characters to go up, and it's just and at the end it's like, oh, you chose the wrong people. I feel like that would be frustrating.
I kind of thought about it, like, if it was going to be a violent revolution, they should have, like, Jodariel, Gilman, like, people who could fight. But then, like, probably halfway through the game, he's like, when you actually start talking to Volfred, he's like, oh, you know, this is going to be, like, a whole peaceful thing. We're just going to, like, ease into it. So, like, I was like, okay, I'm not going to send, like, I ended up not sending Pamatha, like, she would have been, you know, good in a fight or whatever, I would assume. I ended up, like, sending, like, Hedwyn and Volfred himself. It's like, okay, so we want this to be peaceful, but you have enforcers if you need them.
Because the first two I sent up were Tizo and May for me, so I just assumed they were going to do nothing to help this revolution. Like, I can't imagine what they would have done to help outside of, I mean, maybe May would have, like, the stars say you guys should attack there.
The scribes demand blood. No.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Teaser could have, like, driven a wagon full of soldiers or something.
Oh, are they drive imps up in the Commonwealth too? I just thought they were only useful.
That was a huge thing. It was just like, oh, Tiza was the first imp to come to the Commonwealth and was like a novelty item. And I was just like, oh, the mascot character.
Yeah.
So I guess they only exist in the downside. Yeah, I never think Tizo upset on here.
What did you all think of the production values in so much as a lot of the, you know, you're just sort of looking at a 2D illustration of a character, and then maybe they'll move to have a couple different frames going on, but there's really not a lot, like, to look at outside of, you know, whatever background is behind them.
I think it worked for the most part. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it worked for the most part. All the art that is in there looks beautiful. I think this game looks awesome, especially the open world when you're seeing the wagon moving around. Like, it was always delightful to see how it's like a 3D model, and so it bounces around and squashes and stretches when it goes over hills and stuff. You know, as always, Supergiant's art is just the best. The only thing I'd actually really dislike is the what's it called, the key art, like with the logo and everything, and it has like a pink in the back. Like, there's just too many colors, and like the logo gets lost in there, and it's just not, it doesn't seem as premium as most of the stuff usually does. And it's, since it's like the main thumbnail for the game, I think that's a big problem. Fair I don't enough. Know if that's just a designer, you know, quip or quibble with it, but like it really bothers me.
I guess I didn't really pay too much attention to that. I kept always focusing on how the stars would be drawn and like connected to, sort of thing. I always thought that was kind of cool how they designed that, but yeah, I love the freaking wagon. Did you guys ram your wagon into other participants?
Not on purpose. I was just trying to go to the next right, man.
Yeah, sometimes
do it a couple times to get a trophy.
You would cut off, like, you'd go from, like, you know, page to page of the different areas, and you'd come into that next area, and you'd just immediately hit somebody. Like, I didn't mean to do that. Now you're pissed at me.
Some of the rival teams had it coming. It's just like the accusers, like, oh yeah, you guys aren't redeemable in any sort of way. I'm not gonna feel bad about ramming you.
I mean, some of the reactions were pretty funny.
You accidentally rammed the what is it, the fate vehicle, and the grandson's like, what the hell? And the you know, the grandfather's like, it's okay, we can pick up all the pieces, see if we can glue them together. I'm sure it was a complete accident trying to make you feel all guilty. But I just, in terms of production values, I kind of viewed it as like a visual novel. Like, each character had certain like reaction faces, and they would just use those again and again. I usually don't mind that too much, but yeah, this might have been probably one of their lower production titles. So,
yeah, like most of the emotion that you pick up has to be like from, like, the art behind them. Like, you see their character portraits, sometimes their face may change, but a lot of times it doesn't. But like, you see like a little blue like swivel behind them if they're like depressed, or there's like this huge like yellow spark if they're like, you know, fired up or whatever. That's kind of like where all the emotion came from.
So yeah, I mean, I've pretty much gone through most of my notes on this game. Did any of you guys have anything else you wanted to add?
No, not really. Just you know, this is probably the first one of their games I will finish, just eventually, because I felt like the gameplay loop that they presented wasn't particularly strong. It was, hey, go do a right. All right, now click on this button a bunch of, or like exposition, and then go somewhere else. And you get one of two spots and sort of strategize there based on A, who it is, and B, if it's for money or for an item, and then do another right. It just it didn't grip me enough. And I think for the length of the game, like if this game was 6 hours long, I'd be like, yeah, all right, that's fine. Like, that's good back and forth. You get a taste of the gameplay. It elevates in difficulty, and it lets you have time to get better at the game without overstaying its welcome. And I think, you know, again, just based on what I've heard from Hades, that they seem to have gotten that gameplay loop down for that game. So I'm pretty interested to try that one out.
Yeah, I have nothing but praise for Hades, so hopefully you enjoy it. I mean, I'm glad that you feel, you know, good enough about the game that you're going to try to finish it, but I'm sorry, Marcus, that you didn't feel as high on the game as maybe myself and Javi did.
Yeah, sorry, Marcus.
I'm just kidding. I forgive you, too.
I kind of have to agree. Like, I finished it out of obligation. It wasn't so much that I was enjoying it that much. I didn't hate it, but I didn't really. I just finished it because I wanted to finish it. That was it.
I mean, yeah, I actually kind of agree with, yeah, all of that. Where, like, the game, it's just the pacing is a little too slow. And like I said, like, I got really sick of reading stuff and I wanted to just play, you know. And I think it might have been better if there were like less breaks in between the rights. Like if you had like three rights and then some story stuff in between, that might like keep the momentum going. And like even if, like I liked how, what are the, I'm so bad with these character names. One sec, let me find. back to the wiki. Okay, yeah, the Pamatha, you know, begging you to let Tamatha win in the middle of a game. I want more of that, like mid-game story stuff going on. I think that that would be a better way to deliver that kind of thing.
I think I encountered that once. I forget who it was though. Someone else ended up. May have been Tizo. He ended up like talking to somebody in the middle of a match.
I can't remember who it was either, but like they say something and he just like squawks at them really loud.
Tizo talks to the other Nightwing, the bad Nightwing. Like in the middle of the match, he'll have a conversation.
Yeah, that's what it was. But yeah, it only happened, you know, like those two times. So it would have raised the stakes for characters if they had that interaction more.
Yeah, it's kind of a wasted opportunity to like even more so make it so that when you're playing the game, you're having an effect on the story. So like, I could imagine like they could have had something where like when you're playing against another team, there's a character that if you play against them a certain way or you don't. I don't know. You just do certain things, and then you can like win them over and have them maybe join the team or something like that. But like, yeah, they didn't really go that route.
No. Yeah, it's pretty much just like when the other team starts losing, they'll be like, "Okay, we need to pick it up. We need to fire this up," or they'll just be like, "Just get it over with." Like, that's the only interaction you get mid match.
Yeah, but as for the matches themselves, though, I still think the game design's pretty good. Like, I don't have anything against something like an NBA Jam having kind of a story mode that, like, gives context to the games you're playing. I think that's a great idea, but just the amount of story that you have to get through in between every single match became kind of exhausting, and I did kind of lose interest by the end. It was like, oh my god, okay, well, I have to finish this, but I'd rather do something else.
Fair enough.
The music's great, though. Good music.
Oh, yeah. Supergiant Games, their music is always great. I feel like that's music I can put on and like fall asleep to. It's just so calming.
Yeah, and that's why it's kind of hard to read for so long while being lulled to sleep.
I did have one last thing I wanted to ask y'all. Did you bully the merchant into not being himself?
You mean telling
him like when you're at the merchant store and you know he's like he's humming to himself, he's like ah, da, 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 da. Like if you can like click on him and he's like, hey, just stop it. You just tell him to stop doing that. Like, do that. Just be quiet.
He literally says interact with Falcon Run to shut him up. Like, oh. Okay.
Kind of. I just forced him to sell things cheaper. Should I sell things cheaper? Yeah, you should. Of course.
No, you should. Like, there was some economic service, like, you shouldn't devalue your merchandise. And I'm like, who would go with that?
I like sales.
I actually chose that option because I was like, I'm not really buying anything from the store anymore. So, yeah, you do you, buddy.
All right, so that was Pyre. So, for our next game, we already discussed this, but, I put up a list of some games, and it seems like people were most interested in Ratchet & Clank Into the Nexus, Psychonauts, and what was the other game? It was...
Beyond Good and Evil.
Yes. So, did you guys have any preference on which one of those games we played next?
I'm kind of pushing for Psychonauts.
I would love to play Psychonauts, but yeah, I mean, I think that like I kind of want to do Ratchet just because the new one's on the horizon, but I really would rather not have to pull out my PS3 and plug it all in.
It's on PlayStation now.
Oh, I'm not playing it. No, not doing that. No, I tried to play A Crack in Time on PlayStation Now, and it's just so fuzzy. I can't stand it.
I've not played Psychonauts, so that's probably my preference here, but...
That has nothing to do with it, but my PS3 won't turn on, so I would have to get a new one to play Ratchet & Clank.
If you can avoid it, don't play Psychonauts on PS4 because it's the PS2 port, and the PS2 port of Psychonauts is just horrible. It's really bad.
Pretty sure I have it on Steam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I do get where you're coming from with Ratchet Into the Nexus. At the same time, that's like a 6-hour game, and I think I want something a bit, I don't know, meatier for the game we discuss next. And I feel like Psychonauts is definitely a longer game, so my vote's for Psychonauts.
Yeah, I'm down to Psychonauts. It sounds good.
Cool. What about you, Tyler? Are you down for that?
Yeah, we can do that.
You sound so enthused.
We're not all going to get the game we want to play.
Wait, what do you want? Which one would you pick?
I'd pick Ratchet, but that's because it's a little more available to me.
Gotcha.
That's fine.
Okay, cool. So our next game is going to be Psychonauts. So yeah, I hope everybody looks forward to that. And yeah, thanks everybody for joining us. And yeah, I hope whoever's listening to this has a wonderful day. This is Dexter23Jack signing off.